It's episode 28 of the Femme Fatale podcast, and welcome to it. This is the show where you write to me, ask me your questions about the inner workings of Hollywood, and I find the insiders who can answer those questions, and I drag them by their hair, by their weaves if they're a reality star, and I put them in a chair, and I harangue them until you, my listeners, are satisfied. This week, for whatever reason, I fielded a couple of really juicy questions about movie casting, as in what really goes on behind the scenes when you're casting a flick like 50 Shades or the Avengers series. And so I got the perfect person. You've heard me cite Bonnie Gillespie as a source many times over the years on my show. She's a casting director in Hollywood via Cricket Feet Casting. She's also the author of Self-Management for Actors and The Ninja Within. And she will not leave here until she is drained of all pertinent knowledge. Bonnie, I wish you well. This will not hurt a bit. Say hello.
Hello, and I believe you only because I love you, not because I trust you.
Okay, that's fine. Love is a good tactic. You get the creature to love you.
Yes.
And then it's a lot easier to snap their neck.
Right.
Right? Now, later on in the show, I'm going to tackle a different part of the movie-making process for you. Charles from San Francisco is a listener, and he's written a book called Impossibly Glamorous. He's also known as my favorite bear in San Francisco. He's also the only bear I know in San Francisco, but he's awesome. He wants to know how one goes about getting a book optioned. I don't know. Oh, Bonnie, should I do this? Should I talk about my experience of optioning? Really?
Every time. Absolutely.
Even though it was what the movie became?
Well, do it, but wince while you do it.
All right. I don't know how many of you guys know this, and I'm not sure how many of you I actually want knowing this. But I had an article optioned a few years ago, and it was made into a horror movie that was in theaters last year. And I will tell you how my article got turned into a movie, and we'll also explore other ways that articles and books become movies. But first, back to Bonnie. Bonnie, if I had a budget, like a real budget for my podcast, I would not hire a producer or a publicist. I would hire a casting director, and I would use that casting director to find someone wonderful to play me in this podcast, like to do the podcast for me, like maybe the girl with the big katana on The Walking Dead. She could actually talk for a change and say more than one sentence and one grunt per hour, and the show would have the star power it deserves. Now, that said, I do wonder who you would cast as me. Have you ever thought about this?
I'm just now thinking about who I would cast as my lovely Femme Fatale.
Janine Garofalo. I don't know.
That's the older choice.
That's the older choice. Oh, listen to you. How do you lick my ass through Skype? That's amazing.
I'm very talented.
You are really multi-talented. But anyway, I would hire Bonnie to do the casting. Now, from what I gather, correct me if I'm wrong, Bonnie, casting direction is about 1% of a project's total budget?
Yeah, you know, I do low-budget indies, web series, things that fall on the lower than $3 million level, and it tends to shake out at about 1% of the overall project budget goes to the casting director. Of course, that's not including casting the salaries for the actors and things
like
that.
Right, of course. It's just your services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 1% seems to shake out for the most part for the type of casting I do, yeah.
So wait a minute. So if you were to do a $40 million or a $20, $30, $40 million thing.
Then we break through and now we're at a studio level, and then we're hired to work for the studio more likely, or the production company, rather than, you know, doing what's called indie casting. And then you're basically getting paid a weekly rate for your casting services. It's sort of like if you go into television casting, you're paid a weekly rate to cast the folks who come on and surround the series regulars. But the person who cast the pilot was hired on a more indie level, usually casting to find the right actors to build the series around. And then the people who do the weekly casting are paid a weekly salary. Same with higher budget projects. You're not going to get 1% of the budget on a huge special effects movie from a studio, because most of the money is going to special effects, not the cast.
So, okay.
So at that point, you're kind of looking at, if the overall budget is whatever, usually there's 10% of the overall budget goes to actors.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're 1% of the budget, that tracks with 10%, it's sort of a 10% on what the actors are getting. So it's on a larger budget project, you take a look at what the cast budget is rather than the overall budget of the project.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I also, the final question I have regarding that though, is if you said you get paid a weekly salary to cast a big movie, casting can't possibly last more than a month.
Oh, yes, it can.
Why?
Yes, it can. Well, it depends on how big a reach they're trying to put out. You know, if you take a look at something like, Hunger Games and the serial of it, the multiple versions of the film, they're going through and doing these major searches and trying to find and unearth these actors who otherwise have not yet popped on the radar. They're traveling to multiple cities. They're taking a look at casting submissions from all over the world. They're flying people in. It's much longer than just a few weeks. 6 weeks is about the minimum on most independent films. Studio films are also kind of in the 6 week level to anywhere up to 6 months.
That long?
Can be, absolutely.
And then, of course, you may have to come in and do it all over again if something gets put into turnaround or development hell or whatever else.
Absolutely. There's recasting because then your dates got pushed, and when the dates get pushed, you lose your lead actor because she was only available on these dates, and now absolutely.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Someone goes to rehab, you have to recast, that sort of thing.
How's your draining going? I've drained you about... that's about 20. You're about 25% drained. You're excellent. You're doing well. Now,
excellent.
Let's get to our two reader questions just for you. Go ahead and read the first one aloud.
Okay. So Kyle R. asks, Fatal, I bow down to your greatness and request.
Of course.
Question. See, this is better than my butt licking through Skype here. Mm. I hope you can answer.
Okay.
Reports indicate Charlie Hunman, Hunnam, I'm not crazy with the reading, and the studio making the 50 Shades movie claim he dropped out due to, quote, lack of time to prepare for the role. My question is, who's really to blame? The studio reports it's because he didn't have enough time to, again, quote, prepare for the role. Wouldn't they project a workable timeline so he could film the movie without complications? Other sources claim he allegedly got cold feet, backed out of the project. If that's the case, how could he leave the film if he potentially already signed on the dotted line?
Now, I know, do you have like an inside track on this?
I don't have an inside track. I definitely have a strong opinion. The okay. second I saw the news, I went, yep, no script. Got it.
What? No script.
Well, I mean, it's a script that was probably thrown together off a great book that was very popular, probably happened a little faster than some of the better scripts come together. You know, I'm certainly no shade on the people who pulled this together and earned lots and lots of money to do so. But I'm willing to bet that this wasn't the sink your teeth into the role, no pun intended, that kind of experience that Charlie may have been looking for coming off Sons of Anarchy.
Wait a minute. Wouldn't he have gotten a copy of the script and looked at it before taking the role?
You'd hope. But if the script were still in development, he may get a log line, he may get, a copy of the book and some scenes and some sides, and here's where we're going with this. But the suits. The reason I love doing independent film is because I'm talking directly with the people who are creating what's going to end up in the finished product. A lot of times with these projects, you're trying to get something cast while Suits are rearranging furniture with the writer that they've now, maybe it's the third writer that they've hired to adapt something, especially if it's coming from a book. And so maybe they're changing things and rewriting, and the dialogue's not strong and they're beefing it up and they've got ghostwriters involved. I'm not saying that's the situation on this film in particular. I'm just saying when something is rushed to screen, it can have holes. And so they may be casting before there's actually a finished product on which he decides. So what ends up happening, and this speaks to Kyle's question at the end of his bit here, that there is, sure, a dotted line that was signed, but it was signed contingent upon approval of the script almost always. Because if you are signing on to do a project before the script is finalized, you as the actor, especially if you're a name actor, especially if you're bringing cred and butts in seat money to a project, you have to agree that this final version of the script is something that you can get behind.
And you think that's what happened?
It's my theory. I mean, certainly it could also be the fact that what his people are saying is that there just wasn't enough time and this thing got rushed. It's certainly possible that...
How can that be the case? I mean, like my listener said, I mean, wouldn't they build in enough time?
Unless their goal is to make sure they're opening on a certain weekend. You know, there are all these holiday weekends that are better for box office than others. There are award season cutoffs that happen. They may have a goal of the studio to get this project at a certain place in the theatrical distribution chain at a certain stage, and he is feeling rushed. And so that could also be
Wouldn't he have
triggered.
Known all that before he signed? Like, wouldn't he say, yeah, you're going to get the script on this date. We're going to start shooting on Tuesday. If you don't like it, say so now.
Absolutely.
Then why did he suddenly change his mind if he knew shooting starts on Tuesday or whatever?
Hence my assumption it is not the reason his publicists are giving.
Ah, you think it's a lie. You smell a lie.
I think he's given a reason that they can't negotiate their way out of. Because as soon as you say, no, it's not you, it's me, they can't argue their way out of that. But if you say, here's the problem, I don't like the script, they go, great, we're going to throw 10 writers in a room and do another rewrite. We'll have it for you tomorrow.
Why?
He doesn't want to be negotiated into this. He's ready to just not be a part of it.
And that's my last question is, why not just rewrite the script to make him happy?
Because he didn't want that option.
Why?
He would have offered that. I mean, wouldn't you imagine?
Yes.
I mean, I'm sure he's not making $10 doing this movie. He's getting millions. And so certainly there would be a benefit to having them work this out, unless he thinks it's a dog. And if he thinks it's a dog, he'd rather walk away and get all the publicity of being the guy that walked away. So then everybody goes, oh, look, he dodged that bullet.
So in other words, he whatever he saw on the page, he thought there's no saving this. Or he met the people that were doing it and he thought there's no saving these people.
He basically decided this is a no, and I'm going to come up with a reason that they won't be able to fix. It's like when an agent doesn't take on an actor and says it's because you're not yet in the union. They know that that's a stopper because the actor can't just show up to the union and spend money to get in. And so they use it as a stopper. It's the it's not you, it's me reason. And that's what I felt when I saw this news come out. That was the first thing I thought. I was like, yeah, he's a no-go.
So is this an early indication that the movie will not be any good?
It's possible. It's possible. I'm always a wait and see because you never know what kind of magic can happen. This could all be publicity. They could end up, you know, this is just them getting more ink. They're getting our time, our valuable time talking about this right now. You know, absolutely. It could just be that this is all more heat, more drama, so that when the movie comes out, more people show up to see it to see how did it turn out. Who knows? This could be the new publicity stunt.
So wait a minute. You're saying that there's actually a chance that Hunnam was just brought in so that he could leave so that it could be a publicity stunt?
Could have been. I don't know. I find that very unlikely, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. Because look at his name popping up now as he's coming off a series. He's, you know, obviously number one star meter next week. You watch. Go to IMDb Pro. Check it out. He will be number one unless somebody really huge dies. He's going to be there because of this piece of news. And people are going to be talking about it when he gets brought on talk shows. It's going to be the topic of conversation. And then there are people who are going to
look at him and go. So some publicists and some producers may have gotten into a room and said, look, we owe each other some favors. Let's just float Charlie Hunnam as the next guy until he's not. And that'll give us some ink while we figure out our shit.
Ask Britney Spears and her green umbrella. You bet. Publicists come up with a lot of crazy things.
Wait a minute. What about the green umbrella? That she hit a car with an umbrella.
Right, because she needed to have a huge downfall so she could have a huge comeback.
You really think that that's what happened?
Oh, I know that's what happened.
How do you know that? No. You cannot come on my show and say that kind of a thing without backing it up. Did you hear it from somebody who knew?
I heard it from someone I had no reason to believe didn't know. You know, like
somebody close to her team?
Definitely. I didn't feel the need to go verifying, checking. I heard it from someone that made me go, wow, that makes perfect sense.
And this was somebody who had the authority to tell you this. And the closeness to Britney for you to believe this.
Yeah. I'll say all that. Dinner party conversation. You know how that goes.
I do know how that goes. I've heard a lot of interesting stuff over dinner party conversation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. Ask the next reader question for you.
All right. So Jack D asks via email.
Yes.
You think John Krasinski was bait to lower Chris Evans' price for the Captain America gig? According to some sources, probably at a dinner party, he was called in four times for Captain America and did two screen tests. Then Evans swooped in from nowhere and nabbed it without testing. I've heard about this happening elsewhere in the industry. Seems the trick is having the decoys be good enough or credible enough that if the real get storms off, you have those backup guys. Or is that not how it works usually?
Tell me, Bonnie.
It's not how it works usually.
Okay.
Absolutely. The last part is totally true, Jack. That is not how it works usually. Does that mean it's not how it works ever? You know, the issue is in casting, we are constantly bringing in folks or making offers to folks or screen testing, as was the case here, folks that we would be thrilled to get. Does it mean we're not also massaging the phones, making offers, calling, you know, top agents, top managers, saying, can you get the script in front of your guy? You know, I think this would be a really good part for him. Here's what we can negotiate. You know, we don't have active offers out at the same time we're holding casting, but we are having conversations about what offers might look like. So it's certainly possible that offer conversations were going on with Chris Evans' team while John Krasinski was testing, because he was a test-level actor for this project at that time. He was someone who would need to come in and show that he could do it.
But Chris Evans wasn't? Chris Evans did. I didn't know that his profile was so much higher than John Krasinski.
Yeah, because, well, and this is where we get into the whole TV actor thing. You know, John Krasinski is a known commodity for TV. Had he proven himself as a film actor at the time that this was going on? Probably not. You know, maybe as second banana, maybe as, you know, the fallback guy, the best friend that the girl maybe ends up falling in love with. But as a superhero, I don't know. You know, Chris Evans already had cred in major motion picture genre films.
For Fantastic Four.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So he had already proven his worth as a part of a franchise. And so he's more bankable. And remember, when we talk about bankability, and you and I talk about this all the time.
Yes.
With the Ulmer scale and the Forbes Bankability Index, one of the things we're talking about with bankability is, does this actor bring producers money or studios money in upfront sales overseas? Because that's where the real money comes from.
That's right.
It's not butts and seats at theaters down the street here at the, you know, at the local promenade. It is.
It's instead, France. It's Japan. It's China. It's Moldavia. It's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Bolivia buys your film before you've shot a frame because you attach a so-and-so. That attaching the so-and-so, the reason television doesn't help us, and this is why there is still the stigma of a TV actor, although it is dying. The reason there's still the stigma of a TV actor is because it takes several years for the TV show to be a hit in Bolivia.
Oh.
Whereas the film is
released that same year worldwide.
You bet. It's bootlegged. It's shopped over there. Like, it immediately hits. Now, television is starting to catch up with that, obviously, because things are going more, you know, producing direct for Netflix or for Amazon Prime or whatever. And so many things are now becoming concurrent release, and we're doing this whole micro studio version of distribution, which is great. So I think we'll start to see things changing where your top TV star is going to be your top film star. And we've already seen that in terms of there's no stigma attached to your popularity. Like, you can be someone like John Hamm and be on a top TV show and also do major motion pictures and
or be Al Pacino and do an HBO special or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ask Kevin Spacey. You know, you could do House of Cards, which is considered new media.
Right.
And be a major movie star, you know, and that doesn't damage you. They would call you damaged goods once you went and did TV. That's no longer the case, which is cool. However, when it comes to overseas sales and upfront sales, which means I don't know what your script is, I don't know who your director is. All I know is you cast Chris Evans. Here's some money because we know we want to be the first in whatever country to be airing that on our local station.
So that's interesting. Yeah. It isn't even necessarily that John Krasinski didn't do well in his screen tests. He might have been good.
He probably was fantastic. I mean, they wouldn't have brought him in so many times if he sucked.
That's true, actually. There is that story about Cameron Diaz when her first breakout role was The Mask.
Mm-hmm.
And in The Mask, she told an interviewer that she kept getting brought back 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times.
Right.
And she said, finally, she told them, I think you're going to need to get another girl for the part. And they cast her.
Right.
So there are, it's not always a stalling tactic. I think you're right now.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people get all up in arms saying, you know, why are they bringing me in so many times? It must be a bad sign, good sign. You have no idea what the sign is. Just take it as an indication of you're doing good work and they want to see more. You know, that's all it is.
You hear that, actors? Don't give up hope. All right. Let me drain. I think that's good. I think you're almost completely drained. You're looking like a little bit like a little dried out husk. And that's great.
I got to fan myself.
Now, let's go ahead and read the final reader question of the week.
The final reader question comes from Charles, and it is via the Fame Fatale website. This is your favorite bear in San Francisco.
Yes, you are.
Charles.
Yes.
I translated a lot of American celebrities that went to Japan. Translated for a lot of American celebrities that went to Japan, which you can read all about in my book, Impossibly Glamorous. Hence my question. People have said the book lends itself to making a movie. Any tips, dear wonderful woman, on how to get it optioned?
Okay. Bonnie, you already know this. There was a movie in theaters last year. It was a horror movie called The Possession, right?
And
that movie was based on an article that I wrote for the Los Angeles Times. God, what was it, like 2005? It all started when I had heard about this auction on eBay about a supposedly haunted box. And one of my girlfriends sent it to me and was like, you're not going to believe this. Somebody's trying to sell a haunted box. And I clicked on it. And the auction was going crazy and people were spending way too much money for it. And then people started writing in things like, writing on the internet saying things like, oh my God, I looked at a picture of it and my eyes, they burn. And I thought, this is really fun. I'm going to write about this. So I wrote a whole article about how does an urban legend, whether it's true or not, travel this way on eBay. It was interesting. I had a girlfriend at the time. I still have this girlfriend. She's lovely. Who was a producer. God, where was she? She knew a lot of producers because she worked in marketing in the film industry. She's currently at Fox, I believe. I'm not sure where she was before, but she's currently at Fox. And she said, hey, I know a guy who knows a guy who knows Sam Raimi's production company. Why don't we get a meeting? And I said, great. She said, we'll split everything 50-50. I said, that's fair. I said, get me the meeting. So there was this other go-between. There are always these go-betweens. There are 50,000 go-betweens. This other guy named Stan, who is a producer that my friend knew. That producer, Stan, works a lot with Ghost House and Mandate, which are the entities that went on to do The Possession. So Stan brought my girlfriend and me into a meeting. We went into Ghost House Pictures. I didn't meet with Sam Raimi. That didn't happen. If there's one thing you should know, that if you're going to get your book optioned by whoever it is that's going to option it, an actor, a producer, you know, a director, don't count on getting invited to that person's house for dinner to discuss creative direction. It's not going to happen. And they optioned. That's how it worked. That's how they optioned it. But essentially, I knew somebody. Now, if you don't know somebody, you're probably going to need an agent, especially if your book is self-published. And I believe that this book, Charles's book, is self-published. Bonnie, stop me at any point if this sounds incorrect to you.
No, so far so good. I do self-publishing as well, so I agree that there's the know somebody factor.
There's the know somebody factor. So this is what you're going to have to do. If you don't have an agent right now, first of all, if you do have a literary agent right now, it is part of that literary agent's job, in my humble opinion, to direct you to any sub-agents or anyone else that he or she knows that specialize in book to TV or book to movie deals. There's a whole category of agents out there. That's all they do. So when you sign with an agency, often what they'll do to rope you in, and I know because I've gotten this song and dance, is they'll say, yes, I'm the literary agent. I also happen to have a sub agent who you'll work with if you sign with us, who specializes in nothing but book to movie deals. And he's probably going to want to have a hand in your development too. If you don't have an agent, you're going to want to find one that specializes in book to movie deals. Every agency, every major agency has one. Every literary agency, even if they don't have one, they have to know somebody. It's part of their business. So what do? You're going to get the writer's market. You're going to go online. Mm-hmm. You're going to research agents who are interested in specifically this. There are tons of websites out there that do that. Agents who specialize in first-time writers, agents who specialize in self-published people who want to take it to the next step. You're going to find those people online. It's not an easy process.
But if you literally do a Google, for example, like I did a Google the other day, like agents who are interested in first-time supernatural YA novelists, I found some people. You're going to do the same thing for yourself. Bonnie, what else can you advise?
I love all of this, and I agree. It's all about the niche. One of the things that most people get wrong is they say, I found a master list of agents.
No.
Literary agents.
No.
So I'm going to mail my query letter to everyone.
No.
And that is stupid.
Yes.
And not in the good stupid.
No.
That is just stupid, bad, bad, bad. It is all about specificity. It's about researching your niche.
Yes.
It's just like you understand that there's a buyer for anything out there, and it gets more specific, more specific, more specific.
Right.
You find people who are rabid about it. That's what you need. You find somebody who does exactly what it is that you are trying
Correct.
To make happen. And then you're just intersecting with them. You're not selling them something.
No.
You're connecting with someone whose job it is to get down with what you do.
Exactly. And I think in Charles's case, he's going to be looking for agents who specialize in first-time memoirists, for example, that kind of a thing. People who specialize maybe even in foreign travel, who specialize in tell-all, things like that. And people who have a sub-agent or who do that kind of work themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah. One of the things I would do is go and find books that have been turned into movies, that have been turned into series, and just start by researching who backed them, who
yes.
was on the team. You know, you can deconstruct success by taking a look at people who've been successful before you in your niche.
That's exactly right. For example, Friday Night Lights. That mm-hmm. was based on a book that was researched by a guy who went to a town in, I think it was Texas, and wrote down everything he saw. Well, who published that? How did that get optioned? What about Eat, Pray, Love? That was a memoir, got
right
published,
on.
Got optioned. How did that get done? And the best way to do that is to get your ass on Variety, get your ass on The Hollywood Reporter, and find out.
Well, and one of my favorite things is when people say, oh my God, that's so much work. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
And this is your life's work.
Yes, it is.
So if not you, then who? You expect an agent to get behind something that you're excited about, but you won't do the work? Charles, not assuming anything. Saying in general, people are like, oh my God, that's so much work. It's like, yes, because when it hits, it's amazing.
Yes.
Your stuff just got made. That's fabulous.
And let me tell you what kind of work we're talking about. You're going to get on Google Docs, Charles. You're going to create a new Google Doc, and it's just going to be the list of all the agents you've pitched, when you pitched them, what they told you, when you followed up, and everything else. And do you want to know how I know you're going to do this? Because I did this. I have a list, a Google Docs list. I'm trying to get an agent, and I'm super specific. I know exactly what I want. Agents specializing in first-time YA novelists with a supernatural element, aimed at a certain audience whose other books they've repped are like this. I think my list right now, Bonnie, it's got to be 40 agents, 40, 50 agents I've gone through, and I haven't even gotten started yet. That's the reality, and that's going to be your reality, Charles, if you're serious.
It's amazing, and that's exactly what it requires. I think that's perfect and beautiful, and you've illustrated it exactly right, yes.
And if you think that you've worked hard enough, you haven't, start all over again. I'm not kidding. Now, that about wraps it up for this podcast, Bonnie. How can they reach me?
Oh, my goodness. All you beautiful people can leave the Femme Fatale a comment at her homepage at www.thefemmefatale.com. You can tweet her at Femme Fatale Says, or you can talk to her on her flipping Facebook page.
And you got your irons at about 40,000 different fires.
Tell
them all the cool things that you do and where people can find them.
All right. Best place to be anywhere with me is BonnieGillespie.com. That is the hub for all the things, because there are so many things.
There are.
From there, you can get on my mailing list. You can learn about my casting projects, things I'm producing, books that I've written, my weekly column. Get on my mailing list so that you get regular updates on all the cool stuff going on. The big ticket item right now, there's two. One, I'm casting a low-budget independent film called Strays, which we'll be shooting early next year in the dead of winter in Pittsburgh. God help these beautiful actors who are working on this low-budget project, but it is an amazing script, and I'm super excited about it. And the other is I am writing the fourth edition of Self-Management for Actors, which we're currently crowdfunding, because that is the new business model. We're basically doing pre-orders for the fourth edition of Self-Management for Actors through Indiegogo. We're in our final days, and every tweet helps. So if you head over to Indiegogo and look up Self-Management for Actors, Or, of course, check me out at BonnieGillespie.com to get all the links that way. That's going to hook you up. And I'm a big Twitter whore. I'm not so much on the Facebook, but I try to answer everything. I am super proactive with helping actors get their best shot at getting on these low-budget projects, because I know this is where most people start, and I love working with people at the beginning of their game, because that's when all things are possible.
So if anybody needs advice, like, I get this piece of advice all the question all the time. I get this question all the time. Hi, I live out in Flagstaff, Arizona. I live out in, Billings, Montana, and I want to be an actor. How do I do that? You can help them, yes?
Absolutely. I actually wrote a column called So You Want to Be an Actor, and it lists the things you have to prepare yourself for no matter where you live if you actually want to claim this as your profession. But yes, my life's work is about helping people realize how to live their dreams, and there is a lot of work involved. You're basically running a small business. You're an entrepreneur in a creative industry. You're a creative freelancer, and that means there's a lot of work involved that's not the fun creative stuff. And of course, most of the people who choose a creative life do so because they want to create and they don't want to be bothered with the details.
And they can't imagine themselves doing anything else.
Yeah, but unfortunately, if you want to be successful, you do have to focus on the other things, like running a business and opening a Google Doc and doing your research. So yes, I'm all about where creatives do have power, because there are more places that you have power than you think you do.
You're a font, Bonnie.
Thanks, babe. Hopefully not Comic Sans.
No, you are not Comic Sans. Okay. Right. And how does it feel to be completely drained of all knowledge?
I am completely drained, and you dragged me by my hair just as you promised, and I really appreciate that because I need to get my tracks like kind of tightened back in, so I appreciate that.
Well, maybe you've earned a burger. I'd like to take Bonnie out to burgers at Father's Office.
Yay!
Which is a hit place
in
town.
That's coming soon.
I do too, but not your actor husband, only you. Can't afford to feed the whole city.
Got it. Understood. He's like a city. I know.
Thank you, Bonnie, so much for being a guest on the Femme Fatale podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. It was delightful.